Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect lore cast. I'm In7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Specters, welcome back to another exciting week of the Mass Effect Lorecast. I am your host, In7 the Legend, aka Sleepy Sam. Joining me as always is Genesis, who probably has more energy than I do today. Genesis, how's it going?
I kind of do have a lot of energy today. I got some really awesome news, and I've also had 2 candy bars like right before the show, so I'm a little bit sugared up right now.
Ooh, speaking of candy, you know what I just had right before the show? I'm just discovering Dubai chocolate. I don't know if anyone knows about this. It's apparently a big thing on social media right now, but my wife got some. It's pretty good, but in my like amateur take, it tastes a lot like Nestle, like Bunch of Crunch. So I don't know. I mean, I love Bunch of Crunch, but anyway, yes, today we are talking about other corporations, not Nestle, though I wouldn't be surprised if Nestle did exist in the Mass Effect universe. Today we are talking about Eldfell Ashland Energy. Do you remember them, Genesis?
A little bit, but I think a refresher might help.
Okay, so they are it's a human corporation. They are the interplanetary mining conglomerate that are very akin to Facebook in as much as they have this all-encompassing corporate culture, if you will, a cradle-to-grave corporate experience, they call it, for their employees, where they are also funding the colonies where the employees live and yada, yada, yada. And they're also the corporation who had their Ezo freighter blown up over Yondoa, and that created a whole quagmire, I guess you could call it, with the debris raining down on people and the dust form Ezo caused birth defects and cancer and some biotics as well. Anyway, that was Eldfell Ashland, but we get this whole other storyline with them that I didn't quite know about, and I just learned about it, and I thought, you know, we really need to cover this in the corporate episodes. And this one really serves to illustrate the confrontations that these mega corporations are willing to have with organized nations of people in the Mass Effect universe.
You know, I had a conversation with Jay Gray, a lead writer and developer at Artelsorian Games, who does the tabletop RPG of Cyberpunk. And he's a huge Mass Effect nerd, by the way. We were geeking out about how much overlap there is with the corporations of Mass Effect and the corporations of Cyberpunk. In Cyberpunk, we have this like nitty grittier type setting, and it's all about the high technology, low quality of life, where Mass Effect is high tech, high quality. But these are the type of stories where I see that overlap a lot.
You know, it's funny that you should bring that up, like the high tech, high quality of life, because I feel like most of it that we get in the game, we see that there is a higher quality of life than you would expect from like Cyberpunk. However, we also get details in the lore about like really dystopian living conditions that people have to endure, even on the Citadel. Like within the bowels of the Citadel, there's an entire underclass of people that are existing outside of basically even the ward's knowledge. And CSEC is even afraid to go down there. So I think that the Mass Effect universe corporations are just better about serving you the heaping platter of dog do with a nice FU, but it looks prettier.
Yeah, there's that. And I think that aspect of it, the high quality versus low quality of life, it's what is the majority of the population at in these settings? And I would say that a majority of the population in Mass Effect is at that higher level, or at least a standardized level quality of life, where in Cyberpunk, a majority of the people are below standard.
That's fair. That's definitely fair. It doesn't seem like the slums are that widespread in the Mass Effect universe, but who knows what contributions Eldfeld Ashland Energy has toward that. It doesn't seem like these people are particularly in the business of philanthropy or charity. So I wanted to get into this particular storyline of a clash they have with the Quarians, the migrant fleet. So we learned about this once again through Cerberus Daily News, so we got to take everything with a grain of salt, especially when Cerberus Daily News is covering a corporation that may or may not be a Cerberus shell corporation. So here, just take that, keep that in mind as we go through this, and we'll kind of analyze it with that lens. But this is told over a series of entries from Cerberus Daily News, the first one stating, Eldfeld Ashland Energy is refusing to meet with representatives from the Quarian Conclave as they clash over rights to rich veins of palladium discovered on several asteroids on the outskirts of the Nubian Expanse. Does it at all surprise you that a human mining conglomerate is trying to impose basically resource rights in Quarian space?
No, not at all. We talked about this a lot in our expansion episode of how rapidly and fast we are trying out there to get out there and gather as many resources as possible to gain a foothold. And this totally seems like something that falls right in line with that.
Right. And I should correct myself. I said that it was Quarian space, but actually the Nubian Expanse, I don't think is under single dominant control from any one race. However, it is right on the border, I want to say, of the Attican Traverse. And as we know, the Attican Traverse is rather lawless. So not at all surprising that corporations might be willing to go toe-to-toe with another organized nation of people such as the Quarians here, and interesting to me that they're looking for palladium, right? Because palladium is one of those resources that we can mine in Mass Effect 2, which is where we get the Cerberus Daily News updates. So maybe this was the writer's way of trying to work in like, hey, these resources aren't just like a gimmicky thing that you care about, other people care about them too.
I like that though. I love it when lore ties into like, why am I resource gathering? What does this have to do with anything? And this is part of the reason. I really like that.
I also like imagining that like Shepard is going into these areas that are under contested areas between mining conglomerates and like nations of people, and they're fighting over the palladium, right? And then Shepard swoops in, meow, and then drops some probes and is out. All the palladium's gone. Entire fight meaningless.
Especially with the one probe resource. Oh, yeah. Mod.
Oh, yeah. And then all of a sudden, one man or one woman in their ship has completely impoverished an entire solar system. The end. Anyway, yeah. Eldfeld Ashland is basically not backing down from this resource rights fight. The next part of the entry says, Eldfell Ashlyn's sole contribution to the project was to appear with an armed frigate after we finished surveying, then demand that we vacate the unclaimed area, according to Captain Alice Laspar Vasnoloktir. So that's according to a Corian captain. But Eldfell Ashlyn showing up armed, and then he goes on to say, we will continue mining until Eldfell Ashlyn presents the conclave with proof of ownership or speaks to us without hiding behind a gun. We would prefer both.
Getting spicy. I like this. Okay. And I do understand that the company that's doing the mining would want proof of ownership. They were like, we found no documentation on this. I see nothing wrong with us being the first ones here in order to gather this, these resources. So if you're going to contest us on it, do it through legal battles, not through gunfire.
Right. And so this is really something, especially for a migrant group of people who are kicked from solar system to solar system and really treated as second-class citizens anywhere in Citadel space. So they go outside of Citadel space, and yet they're still having to deal with Citadel space corporations pushing them around.
Yeah, I know that there's not, this is not a good argument. I am fully aware of that. I'm just trying to play a little bit of Eldfield devil advocate.
Fair enough. I bet they have their own army of well-paid lawyers willing to argue these points in court. Probably more lawyers than the migrant fleet, I would say. In fact, I feel like the Citadel Council wouldn't even hear the argument probably from the migrant fleet. They'd be like, yeah, whatever. Eldfell Ashlyn can make us money. Go in there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's unfortunate, but it sounds right.
Yeah. But, and you know what the thing is for me, this whole, like why they want the resources, right? So Eldfell Ashlyn Energy is a corporation, meaning that it has to return profit to its investors. So it's a growth mindset for that company, of course. However, for the Corians, palladium being a critical ship resource, if I'm remembering correctly, that isn't that what the ship hull is made out of, the upgraded ship hull on the Normandy? Isn't it primarily palladium? That
sounds right, but I can verify that while you continue.
So if I'm correct, then the Corian, the migrant fleet, could have like a dire need of this as their ships are aging and they need better and better repairs to their hulls. So this is like way more of a life and death kind of need for the Corians, whereas this is just another 2% on the stock for Eldfell Ashlyn.
Palladium is used to upgrade cybernetics, shields, heavy pistols, and armor.
Yes, so there we go. So it even has shield applications as well, meaning that they could probably work this into a lot of different engineering capacities with their fleet. I rest my case there.
Yeah. No, the Quarians need it for actually using it. Eldfield Ashlyn just wants it for making money off of it.
All right. So this is like a situation that absolutely needs a diplomatic mediator to go in and ensure that there is a fair and equitable solution here. That said, that is rarely the case in Mass Effect where there is a fair or equitable solution that works for everybody. Why don't we go ahead and go to the next entry that we get from Cerberus Daily News. Genesis, do you want to read this one for us?
Sure. Eldfield Ashlyn Energy has accused the migrant fleet of destroying a cruiser, 3 frigates, and 6 mining freighters in the Nubian Expanse over a mineral rights dispute. The Quarians denied all charges, saying that they last saw Eldfield Ashlyn ships retreating out of sensor range, presumably to refuel at their cruiser by the system's mass relay.
So this is like, okay, so that That Eldfell Ashland energy ship blowing up over the planet Yondoa, spreading the Ezo dust over the colony, that happened in 2170, and now this is 2185, right? In Mass Effect 2? So 15 years later, the Eldfell Ashland once again finds themselves in a situation with a ship that has been blown up. I'm sorry. That's a total of 10 ships blown up. And there is a dispute over how it has happened.
Ooh. You're right. Because the first one, didn't we find out later on that it was all because of Cerberus? Cerberus did it?
If I'm not mistaken, it's all but confirmed that it was Cerberus trying to test biotics on humanity, or trying to develop biotics in humanity, though it was officially ruled an accident.
Of course. And then again, they're saying that all these ships got destroyed and they're blaming it on the Quarians, but it's not very clear on this one either.
You know what the thing is for me? The Quarians are such an easy scapegoat. They are like such an easy scapegoat, and Eldfell Ashland knows it.
Yeah, the entire universe kind of knows it. They blame everything on the Quarians.
There is probably no evidence that we see in any of the games or any of the lore that would suggest that the Quarians are so aggressive that they would go after 10 ships, destroy 10 ships of Eldfell Ashland energy just for palladium. Because that is first of all, it's a level of aggression they just don't typically exhibit. But second of all, especially because the Geth are not involved here, and neither is Rannik. But second of all, it's way too big of a risk for their fleet.
Yeah, I was going to say, bring up that in Mass Effect 3, there's definitely some aggressive Quarians trying to blow up a dreadnought that I'm still currently occupying. But, you know, beyond that, you're right. This is way too much risk for not enough gain. And I feel like they're a little bit more reserved than that. They would outweigh these. And attacking somebody, a corporation as large as Eldfield Ashland, it's just not them.
Right. And this denial from the Quarians, they give like a supplementary thing where they say that they last saw Eldfell Ashland's ships actually going out of sensor range, retreating. So they are providing some kind of testimony as to what they did see. They're not just, you know, categorically denying everything and saying it's all a lie, it's all a hoax, blah, blah.
Okay, so now I want to know if we do find out any further information on that. And we do have, of course, more to this entry. Eldfield Ashland spokesperson Yves Neville responded, "Yesterday, we lost contact with our ships out in the expanse. Shortly afterward, we received a distress signal from the NSV Stanislaw, reporting a, quote, alien attack. We have very little doubt as to what happened here. Eldfield Ashland officials are planning to go before the Council and ask that the migrant fleet be banned from Citadel space."
Bum, bum, bum. Okay, what stands out to me here is that the Eldfell Ashland spokesperson only says that their distress signal reported a quote-unquote alien attack. Yeah, quote-unquote alien attack, as if to differentiate it from humanity.
Oh.
So it's, guys, hey, it's definitely not humans. It's probably those alien motherfuckers.
But, like, which ones? I mean, all of them are technically alien to human, so why wouldn't you specify?
Right. Why would you not specify, especially, how do you have so much information that you know it's not a group of humans or even any humans involved at all attacking you, but you have so little information that you cannot identify what kind of vessels they are, especially if they're part of the Quarian migrant fleet? I understand a lot of the migrant fleet, they're repurposed ships, right? And there are scrapyard ships, they're blah, 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 blah. However, you would likely know after there were already tensions heating up between the Quarians and Eldfell Ashland Energy. I don't know. It reeks of Cerberus influence, doesn't it? Like, hey guys, distress signal. It's those aliens again.
Yeah, all alien ships look alike. I can't tell the difference between them.
And also, just like, even if that is the distress signal that they received, why does the very next sentence out of the spokesperson's mouth, why is it, we have very little doubt as to what happened here? I do, because what that, you didn't tell us anything with that distress signal. You're just basically saying, it's the usual suspects, isn't it? Like, you're just being blatantly xenophobic.
We're being attacked. I swear it was those guys. I want them banned.
Well, you know, look, we know what's going on here. This is just something that they do. And, man, the fact that they right away asked this council to ban the Quarians from Citadel space, despite the fact that this happened in the Attican Traverse.
Right, a place where this council doesn't really have authority over. They were doing stuff that I don't like. I'm going to go tell mom and dad, and my mom and dad are going to do something about it. That's what this feels like.
I feel like it's also very evident that Eldfell Ashland was like, oh, fine, you think that you want to tussle with the big boys, Quarians? Then we're just going to destroy some of our own ships, blame you, and the council already hates you. So let's see what they have to say about it.
Bring it.
Yeah. This feels like such a typical corporate scumbag move that doesn't surprise me. Because, like, again, there's no evidence right now that the Quarians, that anyone in the migrant fleet destroyed 10 human vessels. Like, as far as I know, before the Cerberus attack on the migrant fleet, the Quarians really don't have anything against humanity.
No. Not that I can really think of. They weren't really involved in the First Contact War. There were no notable signs of it. I mean, you would think, I mean, Shepard, like right out the gate, Shepard has issues with Batarians. If there had been some form and was cautious around Turians, wasn't sure how to interact with Rogans. But for the Quarians, there was really nothing. We didn't know a whole lot about them. We wanted to learn more from Tally because we haven't really interacted with them.
Speaking of Tally, her father would have been alive here. So I wonder, well, actually, depending on when in the game this happened, her father would have been alive, right? So I wonder how much her father was involved in this specific incident, considering that it was the Quarian Conclave that was really leading diplomatic efforts with Eldfell Ashland Energy.
That's true. Definitely for sure Auntie Ron would have had some influence going on here.
Oh, yes. All right. Well, that kind of takes us to the middle of the show where we got to go thank our patrons and read some reviews. And you've got a sound effect voice line for me to guess. So why don't we go over to the mid break? And when we come back, we're going to find out what exactly happens with this Eldfell Ashland Energy kerfuffle, I guess you could call it. All right, we'll be right back.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer. The foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex? Shepard.
Grunt.
Shepard.
Rex. Grunt.
And here we are in the middle of the show where we read your five-star reviews from Apple, from Spotify even. We're reading those from comments on the most recent episodes. And we have one in front of us here from Morton Fisher, who writes, God, G-A-W-D, God, I absolutely love everything about this Lorecast. I think I'm on my 10th or 11th re-listen of this specific Lorecast. You guys keep on getting better, which I didn't think was possible, but shit, here we are. And he actually spelled it shit. I hope that was a reference to The Wire, Morton. Genesis could talk about absolutely nothing, and I'd still listen attentively. Very soothing. Genesis, you've got a fan.
Why, thank you. Thank you very much. I will do phone book readings for you.
Not where I thought you were taking that. Anyway, moving on. Thank you, Morton, for listening to the show.
We also do. We did get a review on Apple Podcasts.
Oh, if you want me to did read we really? Out. I didn't see that one. Yes, please do.
It just popped up 2 days ago from Aspire for More. Aw, Aspire for More. I like that. Long time listener, first time reviewer. 5 stars on Apple Podcast. Just began a career in OTR trucking, and I'm planning to support the show on Patreon soon. Please keep the podcast going. I'm really enjoying listening to you guys do the deep dives and theory crafting ideas. All I can ask is for the impossible, and that would be to make the episodes longer. But seriously, thanks for all of your hard work and to everyone who makes this podcast possible. You're all N7 legends in my book.
Oh, well, Aspire, thank you. Thank you for that. And that's just Genesis and I. We don't have an audio engineer, though that would be nice. We don't have a social media manager, though that would be nice. Yeah, it's just a two-person operation we got going here. So you are also an N7 legend, Genesis.
Yes. Aww.
All right. Well, thank you so much to both Aspire for More and Morton Fisher for the very kind words. I will think about trying to make these episodes longer. We try and go long when we can, but I, being a new dad, am very tired and struggling to keep up with the dishes and laundry, and my life's a mess. So I'll just keep trying to do as much as I can for this podcast. But with that, let's move on to the voice lines, shall we? All right. Where's my sound effect?
Don't fuck
there
with
we
Aria.
Go. I don't know if that played, actually. Did that play?
Don't fuck.
Okay,
with
we did
Aria.
Get that. Okay, well, we got it twice. Don't fuck with Aria. You heard. So here is the voice line from Genesis, and the file name is called Play the First 5 Seconds and Then Pause Longer if You Need a Hint. So we'll play the first 5 seconds.
I don't get how a clothed female can be more attractive than a naked one.
What? Hold on. Let me review that. Let's roll the tape back one more time.
I don't get how a clothed female can be more attractive than a naked one.
I feel like the music is the really key hint here. The music in the background. I'm going to try and start broad and work backward from there. That music sounds like Mass Effect 2. Is it?
I'm going to go blank face until you lock in your final answer.
Okay, all right. You're really wrenching my arm here.
You gave me a super hard one last time. I ain't going easy this week.
Quote. All right. Let me think here. Okay, one more time.
I don't get how a clothed female can be more attractive than a naked one.
I want to say, is this during Morden's loyalty mission? But I'm going to keep listening to the rest of the clip.
Oh, okay.
Lady Benezia was also dressed for her role. An Asari in a pinstriped suit set tongues wagging among the younger male employees, so to speak.
I don't get how a clothed female can be more attractive than a naked one.
There we go. Okay, so Novaria. And is that Rex?
It is.
Wow. Okay, that is a rare Rex line. Congrats. I've never heard that Rex line in the game, I think.
I randomly brought him to Novaria, just testing out weird dialogue, and I heard it, and I was like, okay, you get some really interesting dialogue from the men in this game talking to Lorik Keen.
Do you really? Wow. I think I always bring Liara and Ashley to Novaria. Big surprise.
Try bringing Caden next time.
Really? Okay. What is, well, just enlighten us here. What does Caden say?
He talks about the Asari you can find on the extranet.
Wow. Combine that with his remarks about Liara, and I think we know Caden's type. Okay, yep. Lieutenant. Keep it in your pants. Well, Genesis, thank you for the sound effect. We have a planet card here. Wait one second. Here we go.
Scans have found something.
That's right. Thank you, Edie. Planet card is Namakli. It's an arid but habitable planet. Namakli was briefly colonized by the Pyrena Corporation, a consortium of Asari colonists and socialized Vorcha laborers. After an economic downturn, however, many Asari left the planet, and the Vorcha population kept growing to the point where they bred faster than could be educated. Soon, they turned violent and uncontrollable, and the colonies essentially self-destructed. Today, Namakli is a wasteland with a little population, but Vorcha packs are scattered across the deserts. Settlers frequently run into these packs, discouraging recolonization. The lack of complex biota and scarcity of profitable metals drove the last few proverbial nails into Namakli's coffin. No one has stepped forth in the past few years with the will, the funding, or the firepower to establish a permanent colony.
I also do not want to be overrun by a pack of Vorcha. No, thank you.
Feral Vorcha.
That does not sound pleasant, and I understand why nobody lives there except for the Vorcha.
Can you imagine, like, a group of Vorcha that, like, is numerous enough that you just hear a choir of, "Rah! You die now!" And it's just all in harmony. That'd be terrifying. But now I want to, like, spawn that many Vorcha in somehow into Mass Effect 2 in a level. Kind of like spawning a bunch of scamps in Morrowind.
I love your scamp army. But also the fact that they were bred faster than they could be educated. Oh, no. That's really not good. So these are dumb Vorcha that are feral.
This is basically Vorcha idiocracy on this planet. What happened here? The dumb Vorcha bred too quickly and then society collapsed. So anyway, that's our planet card for today. Very, very optimistic outlook for the future. And we got to shout out our tier 5 patrons: Ed Boy, Kira C, Lieutenant Tosino, Retrobot, Superfly 440, Unfortunate Benefactor, and William. Thank you so much for your continued support of this show. Oh, and we have a special announcement for everybody. We have become Twitch affiliates, if you can believe that. We are affiliates on Twitch because we started the separate Mass Effect Lorecast channel. So come by and watch us sometime. So I have to complete the process. I got the email invitation basically that we are Twitch affiliates. And so I'll need to complete that process, but that is going to be the case probably by the time you hear this episode on the platforms, Spotify, Apple, whatever. But if you want to hear or see our beautiful faces along with our beautiful voices, then you can come by the Twitch, say hello. We'll respond to you if we can. All right, with that, why don't we get back to the rest of the show?
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Salarian reproduction different, very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
So the Koryans, it seems, are once again being set up as a convenient scapegoat.
As per the huge, duh, it's easy to blame a species that is already stereotyped as scavengers or space rats. Of course, it's the Koryans who are trying to mine illegally and secretly destroying EAE equipment. The well-respected EAE isn't doing anything wrong, she says with heavy sarcasm.
Right, yeah, you know those Koryans. Always getting into no good. Isn't that what the Volus guy says in Mass Effect 2 when he accuses that Koryan woman of stealing his credit shit, but the dumbass actually left it on the counter?
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. She call, it's a space rat is what he calls her.
Yes. I love going completely off the wall and getting in their face and then the CSEC officer's face as like Shepard being like, no, you're going to cut this shit out. Right now, this person didn't do anything wrong. So, yeah, the racism against the Koryans is palpable throughout the series, and EAE looks like they are just really leaning into this. Even if they don't know who truly did it, they're definitely jumping to conclusions, it seems, because they haven't put forward any confirmative evidence that the Koryans really did destroy 10 of their ships.
They were seen recently, and then the distress signal said alien attack.
Right, and we know what happened here, right? Oh, man.
Faulty.
Yeah, just go ahead and say the quiet part out loud, EAE. Okay, so we have another entry from Cerberus Daily News where it looks like this whole conflict is actually making ripples on the Citadel, which perhaps is not good for the Koryans. So here it is. It says, the migrant fleet's place in Citadel space is today's leading debate, as the Presidium prepares to launch an independent investigation into the destruction of an Eldfell Ashland energy mining fleet. Quote, that this is even being discussed is frightening, says Asari diplomat Circa Taunus. There's been no time to inspect the fleet's wreckage, and no formal charges were laid. It's a blatantly premature condemnation of the Koryan people.
Somebody is sticking up for the Koryans?
And it's an Asari diplomat.
Well, well. Circa Taunus, not to be confused with Ahsoka Tana. Those two names are very, very similar.
Oh, that cannot be a coincidence.
No, not at all. But no, I'm very surprised. I am pleasantly surprised that there is an Asari diplomat going, take a second look at this, people.
Because right now it just looks like the EAE cried wolf and then ran to the Citadel and said, Mommy, Daddy, he hit me. Mm-hmm. And with just the allegations made and no evidence, apparently, that it was enough for the Citadel Council to say, okay, we're opening an independent investigation into these shenanigans. I would be willing to ask the council how often they are opening independent investigations into mining fleets being destroyed in outlaw space.
Oh, yeah.
Are you just going to open an independent investigation every single time a mining freighter gets destroyed in the Traverse? Really? Is that the precedent you're setting? No? Okay, well, why not? You know, because you could probably look up how many mining vessels had been destroyed up to that point in the year in the Traverse and then say, why didn't you investigate this one? Why didn't you investigate this one? And why didn't you investigate this one? And the answer would probably be that the Koryans were never blamed.
Either the Koryans were never blamed, or the people who were attacked never complained about it because they were doing nefarious shit and didn't want to get caught and have an investigation done.
Fair. Although, that does raise the question of why was Eldfell Ashland Energy operating in outlaw space anyway? So, obviously they want the resources, that's what they'll say, but like Circa Taunus here says, there's no time to inspect the fleet's wreckage, where you would find the kind of evidence, presumably, that you would want. And also, as she points out, no formal charges. So there's no charges at the moment being pressed against the Quarian people. And yet there's an independent investigation that appears to be treating EAE with special privilege that other plaintiffs would not normally get.
It's very true.
Yeah. So public opinion on the matter, however, is more mixed. That's what Cerberus Daily News tells us. Quote, "The flotilla is a floating scrapyard," says an entry from popular blogger Pharaoh Derlin. "When too many ships are beyond repair, what are the Quarians going to do? Take out a loan? It was only a matter of time before they turned pirate."
I know. I'm sorry that you had to read those words. I bet you feel a little dirty.
Reminds me of a guy whose name rhymes with Fucker Darlson. Well, let me do that again. "The flotilla is a floating scrapyard. When too many ships are beyond repair, what are the Quarians going to do? Take out a loan? It was only a matter of time before they turned pirate." Okay, I got to work on the impression a little bit, but you get the point.
Yeah, I got the point. Thank you. Unfortunately, I also do see this as being an opinion that people would have out there. You know, somebody is saying this, especially if he's a popular blogger, meaning that he's definitely putting his voice out there. Whether or not anybody's actually paying attention to it is a different story. But I could see this as being an opinion that could be popularized of people who aren't out there fact checking, who aren't out there actually interacting. I bet you Preston read this blog before he met Tally. You know, these are where his opinions on other species were coming from. And I bet you that he probably held one similar to this.
Right. Well, I think at this point, Preston would have been dead, or Presley. Presley would have been dead. However, I love the social commentary that the writers are making, the Mass Effect writers are making here, because they're holding a mirror up to our own society. And this was 2009 when this came out. Or I'm sorry, 2010 is when this specific Cerberus Daily News entry came out. So 15 years ago, they were holding up that mirror and saying, look at how quick the internet is to jump to scapegoat people, often on the whims of racist stereotypes. Look at that. 15 years ago. That's how long this BS has been going on. And if someone's going to be like, oh, well, you're going woke, like, just miss me with that BS. I don't have the energy for that anymore. Seriously, the intent here is very clear. When too many ships are beyond repair, he writes, what are the Quarians going to do? Take out a loan? It was only a matter of time before they turned pirate. And he's saying this with no evidence. So he's literally just relying on people to connect the dots for him. Those dots being connected by a line called racism. Mm-hmm. This blogger, and hopefully not representative too much of the public opinion, but it sounds like it is so reliant on the, they are the, basically the gypsies, the nomads of the Mass Effect universe, who are seen as second class citizens, who are basically to blame for any kind of property theft or property damage that you might suspect.
Oh yeah. That's very much what it is. I see them being based on the Romnichelle, being based on the Roma, being based on gypsy culture, because it has a lot to do with family and keeping it within your own kind. I see that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, so the Citadel has opened an investigation. Apparently, social media on the extranet is already crucifying the Quarians for this, despite the fact that the only side that we're hearing blame the Quarians is EAE with no evidence at all. But we do get a fourth and final entry. Okay, and I have to warn people here, because this ending to this little storyline is not exactly as satisfying as you might want. So here we go. The fourth one begins: earlier today, the migrant fleet rescued an Eldfeld Ashland Energy employee drifting through the Nubian expanse in a life pod. Navigator Camila Gutierrez, the only survivor of the MSV Stanislaw, says that Koryans had nothing to do with the attack that stranded her. The ship's silhouette was just massive. There's no way the Koryans had that monster in their flotilla. I have never seen anything like it.
Ding dongs.
Whoa. Okay. The fact that thank you, Camila, for coming out and stating the truth that the Koryans had nothing to do with this. But that also shocks and scares me, because me and my Mass Effect brain, I know what this is, but the me in the 2010, or not 2010 timeframe, but in the lore of the game, all we know is that there's a monster ship out there that's attacking things on the outskirts. What could that possibly be?
Right. Yeah, exactly. The heavy implication here is that it's potentially a Reaper, right? However, that would be surprising if that means that Reapers actually were active before the bulk of their forces got there for the harvest, so to speak, in Mass Effect 3. My other thought was that it could have been the Geth.
Oh.
Also have massive ships, the heretics being at the command of the old machines, right?
A dreadnought definitely is bigger than what we have in the Koryan flotilla, so I could see that.
And most people would have never seen a Geth ship.
It's true. Isn't Harbinger somewhere around at this point, though?
No, I believe at the end of Mass Effect 2, Harbinger is seen leading the Reaper forces through dark space toward the Milky Way.
Okay.
So I don't think that he's in the Milky Way quite yet. But again, this also could have been one of those like inconsistent writing things where it was very clear that they were trying to allude to a Reaper presence in the galaxy, but it was never really fleshed out. There's also the possibility that there were, like, you know, other Reapers left in the Milky Way that we just didn't know about. But you'd think that they would have caused more of a ruckus. Of course, it could have been the Collectors, too, because they are human ships.
True.
And the Collector ship is huge.
Oh. Yeah, it is. But I mean, especially the one that we see on the other side of the Omega 4 relay and all that stuff, too. Hmm.
You know what I'm just realizing? That distress signal from the Stanislaw being alien attack, you know? That's oddly similar to what Joker says in the beginning. It's not the Geth. Not really descriptive, but it just tells you who it's not.
Yeah. But then I wonder if Joker knew that it wasn't the Geth, why wouldn't this person know? But then again, that's why they said that it's alien, because it's a ship that they haven't seen before.
Right. And since they are in the Nubian Expanse, they are in the Attican Traverse, somewhere where the Collectors are known to have operated. My guess is it was almost certainly them, although it really does sound Reaper-esque the way that they kind of put it. This ship's silhouette was just massive. So Collectors, yeah, they're acting on the behest of the Reapers anyway. But as far as I know, no other Reapers left in the Attican Traverse. So probably the Collectors. So maybe that means that EAE actually did think that it was the Koryans, but they just truly thought it was the Koryans because they are racist.
Yeah.
They jumped to that conclusion.
Because they couldn't conceive of it being anything else but that.
Yeah, or since Eldfeld Ashland seems to have so many close ties to Cerberus, the elusive man would have known damn well that this was the Collectors. But he could have seen this as, you know, why waste a good crisis? you know, we can use this crisis to further the Cerberus agenda of fear of the alien invaders, right? We can just release the details that makes it sound like it was just aliens, right? Oh, and there's this circumstantial evidence that puts the Quarians in a really negative light. There we go. That's the kind of PR campaign that the Elusive Man would go with.
I unfortunately see that working and the Elusive Man pulling those strings. All right. So do we get anything else to this story?
Yes, we do. And here is the last bits that we get. More remarks from Gutierrez, who says, asked about the attack itself, Gutierrez reported, they blew out our engines before we knew what hit us. Smoke was everywhere. I heard the captain yell something about borders before he ordered us to the life pods. Eldfell Ashland says, it's relieved Gutierrez was recovered, but that the Citadel investigation should continue, quote, until all parties are satisfied.
Okay. I don't know if this, like, makes me feel less Reaper or more Reaper, because the borders, meaning that were they, like, sending husks onto the ship, or if it was a Reaper attack, I guess we haven't really seen that in a space battle in the game to know if the Reapers would deploy onto a ship to try and overtake it. But we do know that the Collectors would have.
I was just going to say, that infamous mission where we play as Joker. Shit, 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 shit.
So, yeah, no, okay, this is definitely sounding a little bit more Collector than Reaper in my head now.
Yeah. Yep. So clearly the Collectors behind this attack on the human mining conglomerate with Cerberus ties. But I believe that we have enough evidence here to reasonably infer that the Elusive Man understands it was the Collectors. EAE, being a possible shell corporation for Cerberus, was basically ordered to put out PR that would paint the Quarians in a very negative light. We know from the events of the novels that the Elusive Man has no love lost for the Quarian fleet, is totally willing to attack them if need be, especially to get Paul Grayson back. So yeah, I think that this is just another kind of chess match between the Elusive Man and Citadel Space, the Elusive Man acting on behest of the Reapers, who are also controlling the Collectors.
Where's the corkboard? Where's the corkboard?
Yeah, right. So, and all the while, the Citadel Council, feckless and ineffective, are just sitting back and completely, apparently, unaware of how they're being used.
Yeah, because until all parties involved are satisfied, your own person is saying that it wasn't the Quarians. What more satisfaction do you need?
You know what's really telling here? If you go back up in our notes to the original notice that Eldfell Ashland put out when their ships got destroyed, they never said anything about all of the people that they would have lost. Just their ships.
Oh.
Eldfell Ashland spokesperson Eve Neville responded, yesterday, we lost contact with our ships out in the expanse. Shortly afterward, we received a distress signal from the MSV Stanislaw reporting an alien attack. We have very little doubt as to what happened here. Nothing about all the people that would have died.
Like hundreds to 1,000 people on 10 ships, minimum of 100 people per ship, and especially on some of those larger ones.
Yep. The frigates, 3 frigates. Yeah. So that's pretty telling in and of itself. If I were Gutierrez, honestly, I would go into witness protection at this point, because I don't think EAE is going to allow her to escape.
Yeah, no. They definitely need her silenced.
Yeah, bad time to be an EAE whistleblower. All right. Well, that's all she wrote, quite literally. That is all Cerberus Daily News wrote about this storyline. But this is just one of those many different corporate storylines that are going on in the background of Mass Effect 2 while we're kind of exploring around the galaxy and chasing down leads on the collectors and all of this different, you know, power struggles, power dynamics and politics is happening. And I just thought this was a really cool part de to our coverage of Eldvel Ashland Energy. What do you think, Jen?
I love the obscure, especially the Citadel Daily News Network ones, because it's something that I didn't get to experience firsthand because I didn't have the game back then when it was actually playing through in real time. And I never had the companion app either, so I didn't get to read any of them in my own time. So listening to this lore and learning about it now just means the next time that I do a playthrough, I'm going to be paying more attention to it. In fact, I know that that's how I've now been playing these games. Because when I did when I did Pharos, I was actually paying attention to whenever Exogeny came up. And I was like, ooh, I know all about this, and was actually paying attention to it. And it just revitalizes the game over and over the more that I learn about the lore.
I have started another playthrough of the original trilogy on my laptop. It's going to be my game that I play in bed while the baby sleeps, while my wife sleeps. And I have committed to doing a no mods playthrough because I've played with mods so much that what is canon and what is mod added is conflating in my mind. And that's bad. That's bad when you run a podcast based on the lore of Mass Effect. So I have to reacquaint myself with the gospel of Shepard in its entirety. But other than that, next week we have more lore coming at you. We need to huddle and talk about where we're going to take this next episode. I believe it's time to cover another character, perhaps a secondary, tertiary character in the background. Genesis, what you got going on until next week, and how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, I've got two other shows. I do the Cyberpunk Lorecast with Toasty and the Two Girls One Ship podcast with Vervada. Good, happy times.
Right on. And are you ready to share that big news about that one podcast and that one convention?
Yeah, that one podcast and that one convention. So we are very, very honored that the Two Girls One Ship podcast has been requested, has been approved for their panel at PAX West. The girls did co-host two panels last year at PAX West, working with a game developer. But this year we got our own panel, and it is going to be Digital Love Throughout the Decades. So it's a video game romance history analysis that we will be presenting at PAX West.
And that is so exciting. I'm so proud of you and excited for you. I am going to try and be there if I can, because I definitely want to see that panel. But more importantly, I want to see everyone else that's in there in the convention hall while they're watching your panel. And no one better say anything mean. But anyway, yeah, if any of our listeners are planning to be at PAX West, just hit us up. Our email is in the show notes. You can reach out to us on social media, and we're going to plan to be there. PAX West is in Seattle. So until next week, I don't have anything else going on, streaming quite irregularly from my own N7 Legend account. Yeah, that's just kind of whenever I have time, because having a baby is nuts. But he's a cute little guy, and he's learning how to grab his feet, which is very cute. So yeah, until next week, people can get a hold of me on social media. If I have it, it's at N7 The Legend. Or you can add me on Steam. And as a reminder, if anyone does add me on Steam or Xbox and N7 The Legend, and this goes for Genesis 2, if you do end up adding either one of us, just send us a little note that, hey, you know, I listen to Lorecast. That's who I am. I'm adding you that way. Otherwise, there's so many like spam and bot accounts that we just don't know. All right.
If you can figure out what my Steam account name is, then yes, you can add me as a friend because it's not Genesis.
Well, I know what it is, but I'm not going to dox you. So until next time, Spectres, we should go.
Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/masseffectlorecast.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do it yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.